The world was not worthy of them. But they didn't care. They were looking for something beyond this world. Interesting thing is God did keep those promises. They just didn't get to see it in their lifetime. So here's what I want you to consider. What's faith in God for? If we have the view, as some people do, that having faith in God is to make your problems go away, you're only seeing half of the story. I think the mature view of faith, if I can use that, especially when you look at somebody like Job, who nothing's really ever happened to anybody the way it happened to him, and have them react in the same way, trusting in God's goodness. The other thing that faith is for is to enable us to endure difficulties while God's doing his wonderful work of art that requires suffering. To enable us to endure with peace in our hearts, because that's what he wants. He wants us to be unshakable. That's our heritage as God's children. We live way beneath it, don't we? We have so much needless worry when we could have peace if we just trusted him. But faith in God isn't just to make the difficulty go away. Faith in God is to enable you to endure when it doesn't go away, because you realize God's doing this good work. You have peace in your heart because you know how it's going to turn out. And you are submissive and confident. And, of course, that affects the people that are watching your life. Let me ask you a question. Do you feel like your faith is working when there are no answers to your prayers? Don't we usually think faith is working when we pray and the problem goes away? But see, faith would be working maybe in an even more important way if the problem didn't go away and I still trust in God. Right? I don't see any nodding heads except for Joe. It's kind of a uniquely American thing, this sense of entitlement that we have, that God owes me a blessing, and if God doesn't bless me and make my life comfortable, then he's letting me down. That's just not what the Bible teaches. So I love Job's response. He passed the first test. You'd think Satan would just slink away and say, well, I guess I was wrong about humans. I guess I was wrong about God. Maybe God is worth trusting. But no, Satan is just so cynical. So let's pick up chapter 2. I'll read all the way to verse 10, and we'll look at this in some detail. We've got lots of time. Again, there was a day when the angels, the sons of God, came to present themselves before the Lord. And Satan, the accuser, actually, because that's what it means, I'm going to read it that way. The accuser came also among them to present himself before the Lord. And the Lord said to the accuser, and this is just almost verbatim what happened in the last meeting with a couple of cool exceptions. From where do you come? And the accuser answered the Lord and said, just going to and fro on the earth, from walking back and forth on it. He never actually admits what he did. What a skunk. And then the Lord said to the accuser, have you considered my servant Job? There's that word spied out, strategized. I know we talked about it last time, but have you really checked him out? That there is none like him on the earth. A blameless and upright man, one who fears God and shuns evil. The Amplified Bible says, one who shuns evil because it's wrong. I just something about that I really like. Not shuns evil because he's afraid of getting caught, but shuns evil because it's wrong. Of course I'm not going to do that. It's wrong. Man, there's not a lot of that going around, is there? I had you underline last week. We'll do it again because they're important words. The word blameless. And the word fears, one who fears God. It's kind of misunderstood, and we dealt with it last night up in Rockland. So, have you strategized this guy? There's nobody like him. Blameless, upright, one who fears God and shuns evil because it's wrong. And still, he holds fast to his integrity, although you incited me against him in order to destroy him without cause. Can't you just see a big smile on God's face saying, it didn't work, did it? I knew it wouldn't. Didn't work. So the accuser answered the Lord and said, skin for skin. Yes, all a man has will he give for his life. In other words, you didn't let me take away the most important thing. But stretch out your hand now and touch his bone and his flesh, and he will surely curse you to your face. I'm going to point out, again, it's not a political commentary, but the Hebrew word for curse, which appears about 8 times in here, is the word barak. Don't know why that's important, but... So here's the challenge. Satan says, stretch out your hand, touch his bone and his flesh, and he will surely curse you to your face. I didn't notice this last week, but Satan said last week, God, you take away everything that he has, and he'll curse you. And here he says, God, you touch his body, you afflict his body, take away his health, he'll curse you. And notice, God doesn't say, okay, I'll do that. God says, I will allow you to do that. I'm not going to touch him. I'm not going to take away his stuff, but I will remove the protection and let you do it. So there's permission. And the Lord said to Satan, he is in your hand, but thank God for that little 3-letter word, because it means that Satan has limitations, but spare his life. And so the accuser went out from the presence of the Lord and struck Job with painful boils from the sole of his foot to the crown of his head. That's not the whole story. Tonight, I mean, as you work your way through the chapter, you'll see this was the most hideous physical thing that ever happened to any human. And I'll give you the gory details a little bit later. The next time we see Job after this comes on him, verse 8, he took for himself a potsherd with which to scrape himself while he sat in New King James says midst of the ashes, but the Hebrew word means the junkyard, the rubbish heap. Absolutely the worst possible place to be sitting with running sores and horrible infection. But the problem was it was where they made the lepers go. Because, in other words, Job was ostracized from society. Nobody wanted to be around him. He did get a visit from his wife. Verse 9. And then his wife said to him, the only person in Job's family that Satan didn't kill. And his wife said to him, are you still holding fast to your integrity? The language in Hebrew seems to mean that she was surprised. She expected something different. And she said, curse God and die. Kind of makes you wonder, maybe that's the reason Satan didn't kill her. He thought she would be more of an asset to his side. We'll talk about that. I think, to be fair to this woman, I think she just was a woman that didn't know God in the way that Job did. And remember, she lost everything too. She got the same bad news. Plus, she had to sit and watch her husband with this hideous disease. So, I mean, it's easy to understand her reaction, especially for somebody that really didn't have a trusting God the way he did. But he said to her, you are speaking now. Looked up the verb tense in Hebrew. And it's best rendered, you are speaking now as one of the foolish women would speak. And the language would indicate this might have been atypical of her. This was not a reaction that would have maybe been normal for her. But here's the thing. Well, we've got one of our rabbit trails tonight I'm going to get to. As you see what a person really is like inside when they are under extreme pressure. And it's quite revealing. Here's two people married to each other. Here's two people with the same God. Two polar extreme opposite reactions to the very same trial. Actually, if you wanted to weigh on the scales, who got the worst end of the deal? It would have to be Job, because he was the one that was touched physically as well. Here's the most important statement, I think, to understand Job's reactions, probably in the whole book, right here in verse 10. Shall we indeed accept only good from God? Shall we not accept adversity also? In all of this, Job did not sin with his lips. And let's look over this and take our rabbit trails and squeeze the juice out of this, and then we'll get the last three verses before we close tonight. So once again, there's an appointed day when the angelic beings have to present themselves before God, and Satan also comes and presents himself. And I had you underline a few words in verse 3, where God's boasting. I mean, I can't see really any other way to look at it. God says, hey, did you check this guy out? There's still nobody like him. You did your very worst that you could get away with, and didn't work. He's still blameless. He's still upright, one who fears God and shuns evil because it's wrong. Still that way. He hasn't budged. The word blameless does not mean sinless. It just means that he has kept his accounts short with God. In fact, you could be really a pretty bad sinner and still be blameless. It just all depends on what you do about your sin. If you humble yourself and confess it to the Lord and he forgives you, then God looks at the book and says, yeah, this guy's not perfect, but he is blameless. And that's Job. The word upright simply means he's a man of integrity. What you see is what you get. No posturing. One of my favorite old words would describe this word upright. It's the word guileless. I love that word. It means there's no deception there. You look at this person and what you're seeing is what is them. No posturing. One who fears God. You remember when we studied in Psalms, we saw the word, the phrase, the fear of the Lord. It's the Hebrew word yareh, Y-A-R-E. And it's not the word for cringing fear. The Bible says that perfect love casts out that kind of fear of God. When you see God's love for you, you don't fear him in that way. But the word yareh is the word for reverence. Reverential awe, what we would call holy fear. The right view of God and his awesomeness and who he is and how holy he is. Not to be afraid of him, but to reverence and respect him. And of course, we talked last week about that's why if a person has that view of God, they shun evil because it's wrong. If they have that view of God, they keep their account short. And they're absolutely transparent and guileless. So a lot hinges on that. If all people are is afraid of getting caught, and that's the only reason they're shunning evil. I mean, I know from experience, sooner or later, the devil will provide you with a temptation or an opportunity to do that same sin when nobody could possibly catch you. If all you're worried about is getting caught, and of course, that wouldn't be a victory over evil in our lives, would it? God wants us to be people who love what's right because it's right, and hate what's wrong because it's wrong. And the proper reverence for God is what brings us to that posture. He still holds his integrity. He passed the test. I find it kind of intriguing that in this discourse, Satan never actually admits what he did. He never actually acknowledged that Job passed the test. It's like he can't even believe. Okay, maybe he didn't care about the stuff, but I know humans. You touch his health, and he'll curse you to your face. So here's that two-sided testing thing. God says, okay, go for it. You have to spare his life. You can't take his life. But do whatever else you want to do. Somebody pointed out, you know, you can see where the Nazis got their ideas, because apparently Satan knows how to inflict the maximum possible pain without actually killing somebody. That's how twisted and evil his mind is. I wrote down the gory details. I'll tell you in a minute. But here's the two-sided testing. Satan absolutely convinced, you let me strike his health, and he'll curse God. So Satan puts him to the test to see him fail. God allows the test because Job is going to pass. God allows the test so that Job's trusting God and submission to God and worship of God will be shown for what it is. And once again, Satan will have to be silenced in his accusations. This helps me. Many times I've asked the Lord, I don't really understand. I'm doing the best that I can to serve you. I've laid my whole life down. I don't understand why it had to go this way. Why did my heart have to be broken? You know, why did the plot line have to go this way? I don't get it. I trust you. I'll keep serving you. But I don't understand why the path had to go that way. And he says, well, that's the reason. Because here you are. You still trust me. You're still serving me. And there's a demonstration. Just like Job was a demonstration. Wouldn't you think two people would know each other, Job and his wife being married all those years? But boy, their reactions were sure different, weren't they? So verse 7, Satan went away and he just pounded Job. Here's the icky list that we're going to see through the next 35 chapters. We'll get little explanations of what all was going on with Job besides the boils. It says his skin turned black. His whole body was swollen to the point that the skin was not elastic enough, and so the skin ripped. And it became infested with worms. He had a constant pain and fever. His face was so deformed that we're going to see in the last three verses in chapter 2 that when his friends traveled a long way just to be there to comfort him, they didn't even recognize him. And when they realized who it was, they flipped out with grief. Shortness of breath. Loss of appetite, loss of sleep. Yeah, that's easy to understand. Extreme weakness. Depression. And nightmares. Still didn't work. You know, the first time that I taught this 27 years ago, I thought it was a great story, and I learned a few things, but my life was going pretty good. So it was just an interesting character study, and, you know, you can sort of back off, and you can kind of look at it objectively. This time, when I'm studying it, I am just picking so much meat out of it because I've had really bad stuff happen to me. And I find in verse 10 the thing that Job said absolutely stops me in my tracks. If we pondered only one thing in the entire book, I think the question that he asks his wife when she tells him to curse God and die is really worth pondering, especially for 21st century Americans. His wife comes to him, not killed. strangely, untouched. Was it because Satan was compassionate? It is kind of interesting. I'll just pass this on for you to consider. I have watched the enemy work in some of your lives. I've watched him try to remove you from fellowship with people who build you up in your trust. And then bring other people along where you're getting input. You have to be really careful who you listen to when you're suffering. Because even well-meaning people, as we're going to see with Job's comforters, even people very close to you can, even unwittingly, be used by the enemy, as Job's wife was. I don't think she was a bad person. I just think she was a person with a really wrong view of God, like all of his friends were. And when she was under the same horrible shock and pressure, you saw come out her true posture about trusting in God. That brings me to my first rabbit trail. We talked about this a lot last night because almost all of us in the Bible study up there in Rockland are all single. And we talked about how important it is, if you are looking for a mate or asking God to send you a mate, that you see that person under pressure. Because if you see them through rose-colored glasses of Facebook, or you see them through, you know, fabulous dating where nobody's dressing normal, nobody's acting normal, you're just seeing this person putting on the best that they are, you can be making a horrible decision if you marry them. You need to see, how do they respond to criticism? Because that's what you're going to have to live with. You're going to see, how do they respond to extreme pressure? How do they respond when all of the things that you work so hard to build are suddenly taken away? Because that might happen.